Medicare Advantage plans account for 54% of total federal Medicare spending, which is about $454 billion. They also reported that in 2023, Medicare beneficiaries had access to, on average, 43 Medicare Advantage plans. So as you can see, if you're trying to think through what you want to do when you're 65 and older, if you want to sign up for Medicare Part A and B, or you have access to these 43 Medicare Advantage plans, how do you pick?
Hi, I'm Clarice Grody, and welcome to the Amplify OT podcast. I'm an occupational therapist by trade and a policy wonk by choice. This podcast is here to help you survive and thrive in the U.S. healthcare system through a better understanding of policy, advocacy, and value-based care. So, let's dive in.
This is probably a saying that we've all heard and probably said, which is that Medicare Advantage is great if you're healthy, but terrible if you're sick. So on this episode of the Amplify OT podcast, we're going to talk about what exactly Medicare Advantage is, why it's popular, and also how it has expanded into the Medicaid space with managed care organizations, or what are also known as MCOs. Now, I feel like because we're talking about health insurance plans here, I do want to put in a disclaimer that in case you are not a healthcare professional, and you're listening to this because you're looking for recommendations on what kind of health insurance plan to sign up for, I want to put in a disclaimer. I am not a health insurance broker. I am not a health insurance expert. Please do not make any decisions based exclusively on this podcast or things you may hear said. I will do my best to make sure that everything I share is factual and up to date. However, most likely there will be some of my opinion mixed in. So this podcast is definitely not supposed to serve as health advice, medical advice, legal advice, et cetera, et cetera. Please speak to the appropriate professionals before selecting a healthcare plan for yourself. So with that said, welcome back, OT Amplifiers. We're talking all about one of our favorite topics, Medicare Advantage and managed care organizations, and basically what just managed care is in general, what role it's playing in our healthcare system, and also how it tends to throw in quite a few roadblocks for us as healthcare providers. Now, this is a bit of a follow-up topic on last week's episode, which is episode 50, all about reimbursement models. And that's where I talk about value and volume-based care. And I specifically talk about capitated payment models. And the reason that it's important to think about listening to that episode as well is because I really get into depth around what capitated payment models are and why people like them or why they're beneficial and what they incentivize. And the reason it's important to understand those is because Medicare Advantage and MCOs are capitated payment models. And I will re-explain that here, but I definitely also encourage you to listen to episode 50 on value and volume-based care to understand more of the intricacies of what capitated payment models are, how they work, and how they're not just prevalent in MCOs, but how they're also prevalent in other areas of healthcare. Now, more likely than not, what you've primarily heard about is Medicare Advantage, also known as Medicare Replacement, Medicare Part C, but more oftenly called Medicare Advantage. And these are contracted commercial insurers who administer the Medicare benefit to individuals enrolled in their plan. Medicare Advantage plans are considered value-based care arrangements. Now, Medicare Advantage plans go back as far as really like the 1970s when we had Medicare Part C plans, but they were previously called Medicare Choice. But in 2003, when Medicare Part D was added, Medicare Choice was renamed to Medicare Advantage. Now, you may have heard discussions in the news about trying to rename Medicare Advantage again due to misleading advertisements and individuals getting confused because they hear Medicare Advantage and think that they may be signing up for a traditional Medicare plan, when in fact they are signing up for a plan with a commercial insurer, not one that is necessarily managed by the federal government like Medicare Part A and B. And Medicare Advantage has grown exponentially since the 1970s when the concept was initially introduced, to the point where in 2023, over half of Medicare eligible beneficiaries are enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan. And according to one of my favorite resources, the Kaiser Family Foundation, and I'll link this article in the bio, Medicare Advantage plans account for 54% of total federal Medicare spending, which is about $454 billion. They also reported that in 2023, Medicare beneficiaries had access to, on average, 43 Medicare Advantage plans. So as you can see, if you're trying to think through what you want to do when you're 65 and older, if you want to sign up for Medicare Part A and B, or you have access to these 43 Medicare Advantage plans, how do you pick? How do you sort through those options? I think signing up for healthcare is exceptionally challenging. I wish it was easier, but you can see why these plans have such a high prevalence. Plus, we all see their advertisements all over TV. And they are popular, primarily because Medicare Advantage plans do cover things that traditional Medicare does not. It can include things like cover for hearing, vision, and dental, which traditional Medicare does not cover. It can also cover things like paying for your groceries, sometimes utility bills, home health visits, not traditional home health, but like a home nurse or a home health aide. It may also cover things like medical transportation. So there are some advantages to Medicare Advantage, and you can see why they're popular. But for those who work in the rehab space, we know that Medicare Advantage can also have a lot of, let's say, barriers when it comes to getting access to healthcare that costs a fair amount of money, meaning it's nearly impossible to get many patients in an inpatient rehab. Often they end up going to skilled nursing facilities, but even more often than that, they're wanting them to go to home health or outpatient. And of course, many of us know that one of the major ways that Medicare Advantage plans control costs is through prior authorization processes, which we don't really see used much at all in Medicare plans. Medicare tends to take more of the approach of auditing versus prior authorization, and Medicare Advantage tends to take the opposite approach of doing prior authorization. Now, they also do audit, don't get me wrong. They definitely take their funds back if they feel it's needed, but they definitely try and control costs primarily through primary authorization processes. Giving you an idea of how much the popularity of Medicare Advantage plans have grown, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, about 19% of Medicare-eligible beneficiaries, so those are people who are eligible to sign up for Medicare, were on Medicare Advantage plans in 2007, versus in 2023, that number grew to 51%. And a lot of what that means for you in the clinic is that you are more likely to deal with a Medicare Advantage plan than you are a traditional Medicare patient. And it's really important to understand the differences between these two plans. A lot of what I talk about here on the podcast and within Amplify OT is what the Medicare policy is. So what applies to Medicare Part A and Part B? Now, Medicare Advantage is technically supposed to provide all the same coverage at minimum that Medicare Part A and Part B covers. However, the coverage criteria does not have to be the same, in meaning that it can be more generous, and they can also employ different methods like prior authorizations, case managers, those sorts of things that you don't see on the Medicare side. Now, I know we haven't talked a lot about managed Medicaid yet, but I promise we'll get there. So let's take a quick step back and summarize some of the quick facts about Medicare Advantage plans and why managed care plans are popular, especially with governments. Medicare Advantage plans are administered by approved commercial insurers who then are funded by federal dollars to administer the Medicare benefit on the government's behalf. And the way they are funded is through a capitated payment model. Capitated is per capita or per head. So Medicare Advantage receives a payment per person that is enrolled in that Medicare Advantage plan. And they receive that payment from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, which is the federal government funded by taxpayer dollars. And these payments are risk adjusted, which we have also seen a lot of scandal in the news around how Medicare Advantage plans have been upcoding patients, so making them sound more complex, which is then getting them a higher payment from the federal government, right? Because the more complex a patient may be, the higher the payment the government is going to issue for that individual in order to cover, theoretically, their more expensive medical needs. Versus someone who may be considered healthier or who has fewer pre-existing conditions or comorbidities would receive a lower payment. And so that's what that risk adjustment is. It's basically it's a payment that adjusts for the risk or the needs of that patient. Risk adjustment is very common. We see it in DRGs and acute care. We see it in PDPM, PDGM, et cetera. The government likes Medicare Advantage plans, one, because it's kind of an easy way to do research on value-based care payments, right? Because the commercial insurance plans are taking on the risk where if they spend more money than what Medicare pays them, they're kind of at a loss, right? They just lose that money. They don't get more money from Medicare. Versus if they spend less money than what Medicare gives them, then they get to keep the difference. So Medicare Advantage plans are able to be much more flexible in the type of services that they cover, like we explained before. So it's kind of a good opportunity to try out some of these more innovative and different value-based care programs. But it's also popular because it's a steady line and predictable payment for the government, because they know that they will be paying X amount every single month, right? It's like being salaried versus hourly. So because CMS is just paying a flat fee per beneficiary enrolled in that plan, they know exactly how much they will spend per year on that patient. Versus if that patient is enrolled in Medicare Part A and B, they don't know how much they'll spend that year on that patient. So Medicare Advantage plans offer a much more predictable payment option. And that's the same thing with state Medicaid plans for managed Medicaid or managed care organizations or MCOs. And they're especially popular in the state because, unlike the federal government, state governments are not allowed to operate at a deficit. So they can't just like borrow a bunch of money or kind of make up money sometimes like the federal government does. So it's even more important for state governments to try and control and have a predictable budget. And so managed care organizations or MCOs for Medicaid are popular because, again, just like Medicare Advantage plans, the state pays these commercial insurers a capitated fee per person enrolled in that MCO plan. And so therefore, it's a predictable payment each month versus if someone's in a traditional Medicaid plan, just like as if they were in a traditional Medicare plan, the state doesn't know how much they will or will not pay for that patient per year. So you can see why this is popular. Plus, it saves the government, both states and federal, money because they don't have to pay someone to review the claims, to look at the prior authorizations, review all the documents. All of that is outsourced to these commercial insurance programs. And on the other side of that, they're also attractive to patients, especially Medicare Advantage plans, because they, one, have significantly more funding for advertising, right? You don't really see advertisements to sign up for traditional Medicare like you do for Humana, Aetna, et cetera. But also because they offer things that traditional Medicare and sometimes traditional Medicaid do not. And that's like we covered earlier, right? That many Medicare Advantage plans will cover things like dental and vision and sometimes medical transportation versus traditional Medicare does not cover that. MCOs and Medicaid also have that same option. But again, with Medicaid, it does get a little bit funkier where it's, I guess, questionable how much choice sometimes, especially Medicaid beneficiaries have when they're signing up for a plan. And because all of these plans can offer different things, can pay for things in a different way, it makes it very difficult to know what they do or don't cover, to unfortunately provide you all with education on what they are, because one, unlike the state and federal government, they don't have to make any of that information public. And two, because even within the same company, the managed care plans can look very different. So just because you sign up for one, let's say, you know, Humana is one of the most popular, Humana Medicare Advantage plans doesn't mean that it's the same as patient B with another Humana Medicare Advantage plan. And because they don't have to make that information public, it's very difficult to know what they cover, how they pay for things, which then makes it obviously difficult to educate you all about Medicare Advantage and also on managed care organizations. So trust me, I wish that I could provide you with all the knowledge and information about how Medicare Advantage pays for OT and other certain services. But unfortunately, one plan is just one plan, and it doesn't have to apply to another plan, even under the same commercial insurer. And even better, they don't have to publicize any of it. And then there's also the fun fact, right, of when things are covered, meaning they're listed as a benefit on a healthcare plan, does not necessarily mean that when you request that service, that it'll actually be approved or paid for. And we definitely see that with inpatient rehab, where inpatient rehab is definitely listed as a covered benefit under Medicare Advantage plans, which is what's frustrating to patients, right? They call their health insurance plan and say, well, you know, my care advocate says that it's covered under my health insurance plan, But when we submitted for prior auth, it got denied, meaning that it's not approved. So it's covered, but not approved. And I have a whole lesson about handling covered versus approved and some of those other fun barriers to access to care in the Mastering OT Policy course, which is in the Amplify OT membership. I've got a link to that in my bio. So I think I've talked your ear off for a while now, so it's a good time for a break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some of the things that have been in the news about MCOs and Medicare Advantage plans, especially around prior authorization and some of the other proposed updates for these plans.
Are you ready to take your occupational therapy practice to the next level? Then look no further than the Amplify OT membership. You heard that right. Amplify OT has its very own membership program. This membership is designed to help occupational therapy practitioners just like you stay informed about the latest developments in Medicare and advocacy. You will have exclusive access to resources, webinars, the Mastering OT Policy and Medicare course, Q&A sessions, plus the ability to DM me your questions and get answers fast. But of course, that is not all. As a member, you'll be part of a community of like-minded occupational therapy practitioners who share their expertise and offer support. So, by joining the Amplify OT membership, you'll be able to stay up to date on the latest Medicare regulations and guidelines, learn how to advocate for your patients and your profession, connect with other OT practitioners and students to share your knowledge, and you'll have access to those exclusive resources and webinars so you can reach your full potential as an OT provider. So don't miss out on this opportunity to take your practice to the next level. Sign up for the Amplify OT membership today by going to the link in the show notes or amplifyot.com/membership. Don't forget to stay informed and be the change that you want to see in our healthcare system. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by MedBridge, your go-to resource for advancing your occupational therapy career and, of course, getting those necessary CEUs. If you are passionate about staying at the forefront of our field and enhancing your skills, MedBridge is a comprehensive solution. With the MedBridge subscription, you gain access to an extensive library of high-quality live and recorded courses led by industry experts. So stay up to date with the latest advancements in occupational therapy, explore evidence-based practice, and enhance your clinical skills. One reason that I really like and recommend MedBridge is because they have both intervention-based courses and policy and reimbursement-based courses, and that is a rare find in a CEU company. But here's the best part for our OT Amplifiers community. If you use the promo code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, you'll unlock an exclusive 40% discount on your MedBridge subscription. Yes, you heard that right, 40% off with the code AMPLIFYOT, that's AMPLIFYOT. This is a fantastic opportunity to save some money, elevate your practice, and support Amplify OT. So don't miss out on this chance to supercharge your professional development and head over to MedBridge.com, use the promo code AMPLIFYOT, and enjoy the benefits of MedBridge while also supporting Amplify OT and all the free resources that we produce here, like this podcast. So again, head to MedBridge.com, use the code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, and we also have the link for you in the show notes. Welcome back. And to get this section started, we're actually going to switch a little bit over to Medicaid, right, which is our joint federal state-funded program, which is for individuals with low income. And it is possible that some Medicare patients are also on Medicaid, which these individuals tend to be referred to as dual eligibles, meaning they're eligible both for Medicare and Medicaid. So in the Medicaid space, we don't have like a managed Medicaid plan, kind of like we do with Medicare Advantage. But instead, in the Medicaid space, they're more commonly referred to as MCOs or managed care organizations. But similar to the federal version, Medicare Advantage, these are also contracted commercial insurers who are paid a capitated fee by the state to administer the Medicaid benefit to the enrolled beneficiaries. MCOs have had a massive, massive expansion over the last few years within multiple different states. And what makes it even more confusing is that many states have multiple MCO plans. So not only do you have your traditional Medicaid plan, which let's face it, navigating a Medicaid website, not the easiest thing to do, but then you also have multiple MCOs. And they can have
different coverage requirements and benefits than traditional Medicaid. Similar to Medicare, they have to cover the minimum of what Medicaid will cover, but again, they often tend to employ much more complex and lengthy prior authorization processes. They tend to audit more, those sorts of things, which can make them very difficult to deal with. And if you thought there's some bad press about Medicare Advantage, you should check out the press about MCOs. John Oliver, if you watch his show, did an absolutely fantastic segment on MCOs, and I highly encourage you to watch it. I found it highly informative. And I think his humor resonates quite well with healthcare workers because he definitely takes an approach of, you know, if you don't laugh, you cry, because he delivers information that is at times quite a bit of a downer in a way that's funny and entertaining. So I have linked to his segment below that's on YouTube. So I definitely encourage you to watch it because it's full of really fascinating information. But there's a lot of problems with MCOs. Just kind of like with any federal or state program, the funding to oversee these plans is limited. So even if there is a complaint or there's a problem, there isn't likely to be a massive investigation into it, primarily due to limited funding and limited resources. Now, this is obviously a bit of an extreme, but it's well known that on Medicare Advantage and with MCOs, there tends to be a significant increase in denied care for medically necessary services. And this is an example out of Iowa, where Iowa State Auditor reported that the privatization of Medicaid in Iowa, which is the implementation of MCOs, has resulted in an 891% increase in members being, quote, illegally denied services or care. Now, this report came in 2021, which was after the decision in 2015 to switch the Iowa Medicaid program away from a fee-for-service Medicaid program, which is how most Medicaid programs are, and many of them are fee-for-service, into a managed care organization that was called Iowa Health Link. Honestly, some of the issues with Medicaid could probably be a whole nother episode because that's something else that John Oliver covers in his episode, which is part of what inspired this podcast, to be honest, was talking about the unraveling of Medicaid after the public health emergency and talks about how many people have lost their Medicaid coverage, many of which is due to basically paperwork errors, which is just horrible. And I know even here in North Carolina, we have had previously 6 MCOs, which I believe are now coming down to 3 or 4 MCOs. So you can either be on traditional Medicaid administered by the state, or you can be part of an MCO. And it's been a big problem, not only with prior authorizations, but also with patients being switched plans, sometimes without their knowledge. And that really makes it difficult for providers because they're having to check what insurance they're on at every single visit. And at times, even though they may be supposed to, the new MCO plan is not following or acknowledging the previous prior authorization for that occupational therapy service. The administrative burden is just exponential when it comes to many of these MCOs and even Medicare Advantage plans compared to traditional Medicaid or traditional Medicare. Now, with all of that kind of a downer of information, there is some light, I guess, at the end of the tunnel where Medicare Advantage plans and MCOs are starting to have a light shown on them and people are starting to investigate what is going on with these plans. And one of the main things that we have seen is CMS trying to tackle and provide more guardrails around the utilization of prior authorization. And prior authorization is exactly as it sounds. It means that you have to apply for approval for covered services before you actually provide the services. So you have to submit the claim to the insurer or request visits to the insurer and wait for it to get approved before they will agree to pay you. And you should probably do this before you continue to provide services to that patient. Sometimes you're allowed to complete the evaluation first before submitting for prior auth. Other times you are not. So earlier this year in January, CMS actually finalized the interoperability and prior authorization final rule. This rule does establish some requirements around Medicare Advantage plans, as well as Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, to help regulate prior authorization. And I will link to this fact sheet again in the show notes, but CMS reports that this policy alone can result in approximately $15 billion of savings over the next 10 years by reducing burdens of prior authorization. And I think I'm going to make a note now that I should probably do an entire episode about prior authorization because it's so, should we say, interesting? But anyways, this new prior authorization rule actually puts guardrails around how long Medicare Advantage plans have to reply to prior authorization requests and that they actually have to provide a standardized reason for why the request was denied, which is just wild, frankly, if you think about it, that wasn't required before. But while this information is just kind of such a bummer, use this again as encouragement that change can happen. So in this prior authorization rule that was just finalized earlier in January, it put guardrails beginning in 2026 that if a prior authorization is requested and is listed as urgent, so often what we see primarily like in hospitals or when they're applying for MRIs, the Medicare Advantage plan has up to 72 hours to respond to that prior authorization, which there were multiple comments saying that 72 hours, frankly, is too long, that 3 days, especially when you're thinking about hospital stays, can be quite long. But this was ultimately the timeline that was decided for now. That doesn't mean it can't change in the future. And for non-urgent requests, they have up to 7 calendar days to respond. And CMS reports that these new timelines, that for some payers, this will recut the standard timeline in half. And one part I really like about this rule, and I think will be really beneficial to us in the future, is that impacted payers, so Medicare Advantage plans or some of these MCO plans, will be required to publicly report their prior authorization metrics. And these reports will be similar to what is already provided by Medicare. And another way that CMS is tracking quality regarding prior authorization is that they also added a new electronic prior authorization measure for eligible clinicians under the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, or MIPS, which is for Medicare Part B. Another big part of this final rule was addressing interoperability, so the ability to exchange data between health systems and the requirement for advancing interoperability to try and improve prior authorization processes. And again, interoperability is an entirely different topic, but this is just another reminder that the way that you document is so crucial, and you're probably feeling this, especially when we're looking at prior authorization and some of the use of AI or artificial intelligence in prior authorization claims. But as we advance interoperability or the ability to exchange data, the way that we document is going to become significantly more important. And I've been part of a project called the PASIO Project, or Post-Acute Care Interoperability Project, looking at how can we align occupational therapy data in an interoperable way, so making it able to be exchanged, which has just been a really fascinating experience and definitely not something I anticipated that I'd be doing when I studied for OT school. And the use of AI in prior authorization is something that CMS is looking into. CMS did issue a statement clarifying that Medicare Advantage plans can use algorithms and artificial intelligence to assist in making coverage determinants, but they do state that these technologies may not override standards related to medical necessity. Now, whether or not that's what's happening in practice could probably be a discussion, but at least it's being looked into. So where does this leave you? Where does this leave occupational therapy? Well, first thing, something that I think is important to note is that we kind of already know, right, what Medicare, traditional Medicare, covers when it comes to occupational therapy. And we know the process for advocacy often involves the final and prior rule process, or the rulemaking process, and also Congress. But with Medicare Advantage plans, as well as MCOs, there is much more flexibility when it comes to advocating for occupational therapy, because you can go to those plans directly. And there are occupational therapy practitioners who are successfully advocating to Medicare Advantage plans, to MCOs, to involve occupational therapy in some of these newer and innovative primary care or value-based care systems. I know I use North Carolina as an example a lot because that's what I do, right? I'm North Carolina's advocacy co-chair, and one of our initiatives is to build better relationships with some of these commercial insurance plans, especially those that have Medicare Advantage or MCOs, in order to discuss with them what occupational therapy is, learn what their initiatives are, and see how occupational therapy can fit into that. Another company that has had success advocating for occupational therapy and innovative coverage within Medicare Advantage plans is a company called Jukebox Health, where they have been successfully advocating with Medicare Advantage plans to cover occupational therapy evaluations for home safety and home modifications, and then getting them to actually cover and pay for those home modifications in order to prevent falls. And I'm hoping that I can get them to come and speak at the Amplify Therapy Summit this summer in July, which free registration is open through the end of April. Again, link in the bio. It's free to attend unless you want to be a VIP, which gets you access to a bunch of different other things. But anyways, change is possible. We just have to reach out and ask for it. Oftentimes, and this is even true in prior authorization claims, or sometimes when insurers will cut services or cut reimbursement, they take the approach sometimes of deny first and see who pushes back. And we need to be the squeaky wheel that pushes back. So recognize your expertise, own your expertise. Do not be afraid to stand up for yourself, to advocate for yourself, to advocate for your patients, to call these plans and discuss with them what occupational therapy is, what your patient needs. Document those things within your documentation. And this is especially important as we kind of even move towards interoperability. And as these language models are developing, right, they are trained on our documentation. So if our documentation isn't very good, if our notes aren't very good, then it's being trained on bad data, which is just going to produce bad results. And trust me, I feel the weight of some of this a lot, of how frustrating it is. And it's easy to feel like we don't have any control, but I want you to know that you do. That even if you speak up for occupational therapy, that you call an insurer and you talk to someone, or you push back against a claim denial, even if you aren't successful, you are still laying a stone in that path towards success. Advocacy is not only successful when we get what we want, it's also successful just because the process happened. So there's so much else that we could talk about when it comes to Medicare Advantage plans, when it comes to MCOs, but know that there are opportunities for occupational therapy because these plans can cover things that aren't traditionally covered by Medicare or Medicaid. So there are opportunities for you to advocate for innovative services such as occupational therapy in primary care models, such as preventative care, such as health coaching potentially, such as chronic disease management, home modifications, whatever it may be. Get your evidence together, get your argument together, and present it and keep talking about it. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. So be the squeaky wheel in our healthcare system and never stop talking about occupational therapy. So with all that said, thank you so much again for listening to the Amplify OT podcast. Please let me know if you have any questions. I also am starting a new feature where I have a phone number that you can call or text and leave me a memo, either asking a question or just saying hello. You can either text it to me and I will use that question potentially as a podcast episode or answer it on the pod, or feel free to leave me a voice memo. I promise I won't answer the phone, so it'll go straight to the voicemail, so you don't have to worry about talking to me or having an awkward conversation. So that number is in the show notes, so please feel free to text or call at any time. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you next time, where the next episode will be all about the differences between nursing homes and skilled nursing facilities. All right, keep speaking up and speaking often, and remember, if you don't advocate for occupational therapy, who will? See you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to the Amplify OT podcast. Hey, did you know that I have a free newsletter? Yes, that is correct. In addition to the free podcast, the free articles, I also have a free newsletter, and you can subscribe using the link in the show notes. This way, you will never miss an update. If you love this podcast, I have two requests. First, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. And second, consider leaving a gift using the link in the show notes so that I can continue to support this podcast and provide this resource for free. Consider it a gift to your future self. And if you don't love the podcast, well, I hope you just have a fantastic day and forget I said anything about that review. Okay, folks, keep speaking out and speaking often, and I'll catch you next time.